SU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. With the coming of spring, you can rest assured two things will happen. Baseball spring training, and the Baseball in Literature and Culture Conference, which this year is scheduled for April the 1st in the James Union Building, a pretty much all-day-long affair with the special luncheon speaker scheduled to be Jim Rooker, former Major League pitcher, most notably with the 79 World Series champion Pittsburgh Pirates, and now a children's book author. And here to talk with us today about the conference that he has spent a great deal of time organizing this year is Dr. Warren Tormey, professor of English at MTSU, has worked on this with Dr. Ron Cates year after year after year, and I believe this will be the sixth year for the conference at MTSU. Right, Warren?
That's right. We got a hold of this conference from Indiana State University. Dr. Peter Carino had organized the event for a decade, and we were regular attendees up there, and so when the opportunity came to bring it to Murfreesboro, we jumped at the chance, and we've had it here ever since.
Now, this is a conference about baseball and literature, and the papers, this is an academic conference with papers being submitted by scholars from all over the country, and this year, you might say, all over the world. At least we have a couple of
that's a first for us.
International papers in the mix. And tell us what makes this this sort of endeavor so much fun. What kind of people are attracted to this particular kind of academic conference?
Well, it's really, for us, it's a labor of love, because we're baseball fans, and both Ron Cates and I are big followers of the game, and our third organizer, Dr. Crosby Hunt, is a lifelong fan as well. We get people from, like you say, across the country. There are two other conferences like this one, and we're lucky to have pretty much a nice niche here in the Southeast. We get people from a variety of disciplines and academic fields. It's not just scholars of literature who attend. We get people who are in media studies. We get historians. We get people in performing arts, creative writers, interested folks from a variety of academic disciplines. And so we have a nice mix of topics, and we have some folks who have been with us from the very beginning. We're particularly thankful for some folks from Carson Newman College, Jerry Wood and Sean O'Hare and Andy Hazuka, who started there and was as lately at Ottawa University in Kansas. We've also got some folks from other parts of the country, Tom Vivi from Dalton State in Georgia, Jim Blackstock from Cleveland, Ohio, been a regular. We also get a lot of folks from MTSU. We've enjoyed the support of the philosophy department. Doctors Ron Bombardi and Phil Oliver have been regular presenters for the last couple of years. And we've also got a lot of newcomers this year as well. And we're particularly excited about those folks because they're the ones who keep the project moving forward.
Now, what is it about baseball uniquely that causes it to inspire so much literature? Other sports inspire literature as well, football, golf, boxing, but baseball, it seems to be more quality literature, both in terms of quantity and quality, that is inspired by this sport than there are other sports. Even boxing in the Ring Lardner years the output was, I think, more short story than anything else, but it didn't inspire as many novels as baseball does.
Well, you know, I think we have to credit the game for the great literature that it produces. It's distinctly American, although it probably, and we've had people investigate this in previous years, Dr. Jeremy Lawrence and Dr. George Fleet from Youngstown State, they've covered a lot of topics relating to the game's origins and its derivations from British cricket. But the game itself has been a constant in American culture and society for almost as long as, you know, dating back to the Revolutionary War. And you don't see mention of football or basketball in the poetry of Walt Whitman. You don't have the same, wonderfully complicated personalities who have played the game. You know, the game itself provides opportunities for movement across class boundaries and opportunities for redemption. Anybody who's seen the Bernard Malamud, read the novel The Natural and seen the movie, read the novels of Kinsella, knows how the game has, will work with stories that involve supernatural elements. You know, it's in the game. Mm-hmm. It really is. And the game has been a constant presence in American history and culture and society since really the country's very early days.
So. I believe the Susan Sarandon character in Bull Durham mentions that there are just the exact same number of stitches in a baseball is the same number of beads in a rosary, in Catholic rosary. And there's also something kind of zen about the fact that the dimensions remain the same around the infield. It's the same distance between the bases, the same pace distance, 60 feet 6 inches from the mound to home plate in every ballpark, even though the walls, the outfield walls, are further back and closer up in some parks than they are in others.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. One of our regular presenters, Carl Shanassi, Professor Shanassi of Miles College, gave a paper some years ago about involving the Kinsella novels, and you have that great speech by the Salinger character played by James Earl Jones in the movie version, and this is a great epitaph for baseball, making basically that point. The game is the constant. And some of our other presenters have touched on that as well. And the Zen component, it's funny, our own Phil Oliver of MTSU's philosophy department is giving a paper this year about Sid Finch, the mythical fictional character who was conceived of by George Plimpton. And the title of his presentation is Zen and Now. Let's see, I've got it right here. Zen and Now, The Short and Incredible Career of Sid Finch. So,
and we have an entire, in this particular conference, the 16th annual conference, we have an entire session dedicated to baseball in Asian context with two gentlemen from National Central University in Taiwan and the other from National Chang Kung University in Taiwan. So if you've ever wondered why there was that spate, especially in the 80s, of American ball players going to Japan, Bob Horner of the Braves and some other people to go play over there, or if you've read Sadaharu Oh's book, the Japanese home run king and the worldwide all-time home run king, about how the role that Zen Buddhism played in his ability to concentrate on hitting a baseball, I think that's going to be a particularly fascinating session, and it's one of the first ones of the conference.
That's the beauty of it. Also, a member of that panel is Mr. Michael Pagel, who is a grad student in the English program here at MTSU. So, we've got both the local and the international represented there.
The topics are always interesting, and you never fail to tackle the subject of race, and in past years you've also tackled the subject of gender too. And it's not just as simple as going back and looking at the Negro Leagues and examining the role of African Americans in, mm-hmm. in baseball, there's always something deeper contextually
mm-hmm. sure.
to the issues that you bring up mm-hmm. about blacks in baseball at this mm-hmm. conference, and I really appreciate that.
Well, we've been very fortunate. One of our regulars is Dr. Daniel Anderson of Dominican University in Chicago, and he's done a lot of work in uncovering some of the, the debates in African-American intellectual circles during the Harlem Renaissance that circulated around the game. And this year, Andy Hazuka, who I mentioned as somebody who has been a consistent regular since the early days, he's looking closely at the Jackie Robinson era and the early in Robinson's major league career. So it's a topic that, lends itself to a lot of continuing inquiry. I think it was 2 years ago we had Nashville native Harriet Kimbrough Hamilton, who is the daughter of the Negro League great Henry Kimbrough, and she gave our keynote address. So we've just had a lot of local interest in that project and a lot of opportunities to really uncover some of the crucial issues associated with the Negro Leagues and their role in their larger role in American history and culture.
Now, your luncheon speaker, Jim Rooker, who is a pitcher with the 79 World Series We Are Family Pittsburgh
mm-hmm,
Pirates.
One of my favorite teams.
As well as a couple of other teams he played for as well, the Royals and what was the other team? Came up with the Tigers, okay.
In 68, although I don't know if he was on their World Series roster that year.
And when his career was over, he became a broadcaster for the Pirates, a member of their broadcast team, and now he has turned to children's literature. This mm-hmm. is going to be the first author of children's literature you've had speak at the conference, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, have had some well-known personalities in previous years who have written autobiographies and historical studies. And
Fergie Jenkins,
Mudcat Grant. Even Bill Lee and Denny McLane qualify on those fronts. But Mr. Rooker is somebody who I think has discovered, who's bitten by the literary bug later in his life and developed a line of stories that accommodate an early childhood audience. And, so we'll see what he says about how baseball can teach important values like teamwork and cooperation and, a lot of things that are important to an early childhood audience.
Some of his books are titled Kit the Mitt, Matt mm-hmm. the Bat, and Paul the Baseball.
Mm-hmm. We can see the early childhood orientation there.
And these are the big, thick cardboard type books mm-hmm. that are supposed to be toddler-proof or mm-hmm. pre-K proof.
Yes, they stand up to a lot of rough handling.
Yeah.
I think it was the ball player and Mr. Rooker which enabled him to see the value in making books that stand up.
Or partly the grandfather and Mr.
Yeah,
Rooker, too, perhaps.
That could also factor in a major way.
Your breakfast speaker is going to be Professor Stephen Andrews, who has been at the conference before.
Right.
He is an English professor from the Grinnell College in Grinnell, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
He focuses on American literature and American attitudes toward land and landscape. Now, how does he combine that particular interest with his love of baseball?
Well, Stephen Andrews has been a wonderful contributor over the years, and he has developed kind of a following among regular attendees as somebody who finds that little kernel in American culture and can explore it from multiple dimensions. And He is tapping into this instinct that I've seen articulated by other scholars, notably Pete Carino from Indiana State, looking at ballparks and their kind of almost contradictory place in visions of the American landscape. Baseball is associated with a lot of pastoral myths and, you know, our agrarian history and
playing out in the cow field and sliding into what you thought was second base.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
It's not heaven, it's Iowa. And, you know, the game has those associations. And Stephen Andrews does a lot of interesting things with baseball parks, not only as sites associated with America's pastoral agrarian past, but also, you know, the ballpark's almost contradictory presence in American urban centers, too. Ballpark is an interesting place. You know, baseball has all these country associations, but in a lot of ways it's really a city game, and the ballpark is the place where these contradictory impulses come together.
Stickball. Mm-hmm. You hit it with a stick. First
Absolutely.
Base is the fire hydrant, mm-hmm. and second base is that car, and mm-hmm. you know, that's how you play it on the street.
In his most recent presentation, Dr. Andrews did a wonderful analysis of baseball at the D.C. Diamond, the baseball diamond built in the shadow of the Washington Monument. And he was looking at the depiction of that space in the 1951 version of the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still. So he's very interested in landscapes, and you know, baseball provides a lot of opportunity for him to gauge that academic interest. And I also learned recently that he is also interested in national parks, and you know, has a research interest that allows him to spend time in all of these kinds of settings, and so we're just very fortunate to have him here this year as our keynote.
The architecture of baseball parks has changed so much over mm-hmm. time, from the wooden fences with that were made up virtually of ad after ad after ad after mm-hmm. ad after ad.
Maybe roped off spectators, too.
Right. And eventually to the very antiseptic cookie-cutter stadiums mm-hmm. of the 70s, Three Rivers mm-hmm. and Riverfront and Veterans Stadium.
Probably have a few things to say about that.
Yes, and turf burns on your mm-hmm. elbows, and, mm-hmm. and from AstroTurf diving for bloopers and whatnot mm-hmm. to the mm-hmm. you know, blast from the past stadiums that started mm-hmm. with Oriole Park at Camden Yards
right,
in Baltimore.
Retro ballparks that we started seeing in the early 90s, mm-hmm. and pretty much there are only a few places that. Only a few teams that play in the cookie-cutter stadiums anymore, so it's been a nice trend.
In the scandal-ridden 21st century and all the tell-all nonfiction books that are mm-hmm. being written about baseball, what does the future portend for baseball literature, both fiction and nonfiction?
Well, hard to say. I take comfort in the observations of Buck O'Neill, who said in the Ken Burns series, you can't kill the game, you can't kill it. Always comes along to re-engage the public. And I also remember, and I forget who said this, but I think it was also in the Ken Burns series, you know, baseball's a great game because the people who run it keep trying to screw it up, and they can't. It always comes back. And so
George Steinbrenner is rolling over in his grave as we speak, mm-hmm. but it's true.
Well, it's, you know, it's built into the game. And, you know, even though we have a greater field of opportunities to watch sports and play sports and, you know, arguable that other sports like football have overtaken baseball as the national game. there's nothing like the ballpark in the summer, and I don't think that's going to go away, whether you're watching a little league team play in a nice rural ball field, or whether you're in a major league city going to see the major leaguers play. The experience of being at the ballpark is unique. Other sports can offer comparable environments and settings, but baseball has the summer season cornered, and it's not going to lose that anytime soon. So,
just to play devil's advocate and to rain on your parade for a moment, what would you say to someone who says, you know, I can't believe that serious scholars are spending their time on this when they ought to be finding cures for cancer or teaching my kid who can't put a subject and a predicate together how to read, or teaching them something that will help them to make a living in the world? Why would a bunch of scholars spend their time digging into the arcana of baseball?
Well, that's an interesting question and a valid one. I taught a sports literature class for years, and I never divulged this to the students, but by teaching sports history and baseball history, you're also teaching American history. And so you can't really isolate the sport from the context. By teaching sports literature and baseball literature, you're teaching someone to understand how events unfold over time and how stories get put together and how certain kinds of stories have their appeal. And you're putting somebody in a position to explain how a particular game, accommodates or, plays with somebody's attention span and draws their interest in. And if you can teach someone to do that, you're teaching someone, first of all, a useful academic skill, but you're also teaching somebody how to express themselves, how to understand something in a new light. You're teaching them a very useful job skill, and, that's not going to go away either. Most of the people who present are scholars in other fields, but, baseball provides them with, a case study for understanding this particular historical moment or this media trend that we're seeing or this chapter in civil rights history or possibly, this, emerging trend in American culture within a particular time frame. I think we all get it that baseball is one part of our professional lives, and we're fortunate to have the opportunity to shed light on, this team or that player or that work of literature or, shed light on the game in some context that we feel deserves more attention.
Do you think that literature has done a better job than the movies or television or other media in terms of bringing the game to life for people?
I think so. And here's why. Case study, book version, The Natural. Very different kind of story from the movie version, The Natural. And we've had presenters in the past, engage those two versions of it. We've been very fortunate to have people talk about the experience of teaching the novel when students of a certain age, go to the movie and can go to the movie. So we can, I think the book just demands a lot more, but also gives a lot more than the movie version, which is, a wonderful, reassuring, comforting movie with wonderful cinematography and great period detail.
And but, great music by Randy Newman.
Yes. The movie does a lot of wonderful things, but I think the book is truer to life. There are plenty of good baseball movies, and we've had people in previous years look at there. Well, I think we've got a couple of folks this year who are going to focus on specific baseball movies as well. And the movies have their own sets of issues and complications and nuances, but there's just a wonderful body of baseball literature out there, and the game gives an awful lot to writers who want to understand how some aspect sheds light on the human experience. So I think that is my qualified answer. Yes, literature is better. Baseball literature is better than baseball books are stand out above baseball movies. But I've yet to see the exceptions, so it might be out there. I just haven't seen it yet.
Though all of the critical thinking reasons that you've mentioned in your past two previous answers, the reason I like that the movie Chariots of Fire is my favorite sports movie overall. It's not about baseball. It's purportedly on the surface about the Olympics, but it's also about the British class system and anti-Semitism and religion. It's about so much more than the sport or the sporting event it purports to be about.
Sure.
Is there any one baseball book that encompasses all of that for you better than any other?
Now that is a loaded question. I'd be hard-pressed to put my finger on my favorite baseball book. To answer your question in one way, I'd offer any baseball novel by David Halberstam, because he does a wonderful job recapturing the history and culture of particular time periods and cities and teams and clubhouses, and that's an illustration of how baseball offers one the vehicle to a point of entry into social history, and offers that.
You anticipated my next question, which was, are the best baseball books written by novelists who happen to love the game, or by sports journalists who write for a living in a very different kind of way, but cover the game day after day after day?
Well, the counterpoint to Halberstam's novel is Eric Rolf Greenberg's novel, The Celebrant, which does a lot of the same things, looks at the role of baseball in the process by which immigrant cultures get assimilated. It offers wonderful insight on the way that ballplayers become these mythic heroic figures. It is true to a particular time period, turn of the century New York City and the New York Giants and Christy Mathewson. The story is told through the point of view of a the son of an immigrant family who is in the process of assimilating and building a successful jewelry business. So a lot of what you see in a David Halberstam coverage of the 1964 World Series or the 1949 season, the 1949 American League pennant race, you also find those things in some fiction, and The Celebrant stands out as an example where you can do that. Another one that I really enjoyed, historical baseball fiction, was Harry Stein's novel Hoopla, which was about baseball, but it was also about the Jack Johnson-Jim Jeffries fight. One of the narrators of that novel was the banished White Sox third baseman, Buck Weaver, and those are the ones that I would offer as baseball fiction, which does neat things and recaptures time periods, and you know, you can approach it from the fictional angle or the non-fictional angle, and the game will support both of them. So,
if you are a baseball fan or a literature fan or a baseball literature fan and you want to savor all this and take it in, what do you need to do in order to attend the conference?
Well, we have a panel of presenters. Our conference begins at 8 o'clock, really 8:15 on April 1st. The event is open to all members of the MTSU community, students, faculty, staff, people who want to come hear a session or want to come hear Jim Rooker speak. The event is open to the public. If someone wants to participate more fully and attend sessions throughout the day and stay for lunch, the conference registration fee is $70. If somebody just wants to come for lunch and hear Jim Rooker talk, the cost is $10. And all you need to do is show up at the James Union Building on Friday, April 1st, and you'll see us there.
And if you have any more questions, contact Warren. His email address is tormey@mtsu.edu, right?
That's right. And I will, it might take me a day or so, but I will answer any emails. So.
Great. Well, Dr. Warren Tormey, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been great fun.
I'm Jenna Logue. This is MTSU On the Record. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.